is Alexanderburg State. Gregory Wayne Alexander versus State of Texas. Counsel is here, so we'll hear from you, Tom.
Good morning, police court, counsel. This is a case involving an appeal from an aggravated assault with a deadly weapon case. And I think my argument can pretty much be summed up with a bad riddle. When is a law not a law? When it violates its constitutional rights. Now, that may not have been funny, but like most jokes I make, it requires a little explanation. So basically, there's a three.
Well, three. You didn't get the nasty look I got from Justice Dalton back in the day when I made a kind of a funny argument like that. So
I appreciate you not giving me a nasty look. But basically, there are three hurdles that I have to cross in this argument. Basically, the state alleged in their indictment that bodily injury was caused with a deadly weapon, to wit, a wooden log. Now, I am saying that it wasn't a wooden log. It was some kind of hoe handle or stick or some other shaped, rounded, sanded object.
Well, your objection is not with the term wooden,
though. It is not with the term wooden.
Because the indictment does, in fact, use the term wooden as a adjective qualified.
Right.
You not agree.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Okay.
But, you know, wooden as a quantifying adjective doesn't make it any less of a log. If the state argued that it was hit with a wooden toy truck, I would say that, you know, a toy truck is in no way even close to a log. It's just not the same thing.
But if he hit you with a wooden toy truck, it still alleged the same offense, wouldn't it?
Well, it would be, it could possibly be the same offense, but I would say that the amount of damage that, or the type of damage that a log and a wooden toy truck would inflict on a defendant could be completely separate units of prosecution. I do understand that the gravamen of the offense is that a bodily injury was caused and a deadly weapon was used. However, because what was alleged in the indictment and what was proven at trial were so different, I believe that there was a material variance in this case. And so that's basically just one of the hurdles that I have to cross. I understand that there are three hurdles that I have to cross. First, I have to prove that there is a variance, that what was proved at trial was different than what was alleged in the indictment. Then I have to prove that the variance was material. And then I have to prove that because of a material variance, that the defendant's rights were violated. So I'll go ahead and start with.
So let's assume you proved the first one because log is log, and there was no testimony. There's some testimony about maybe it could have been perceived as such.
Right.
But let's assume the first, and let's deal with the materiality and whether or not the variance is fake.
Okay. Well, material variance. In order for a variance to be material, it has to. I missed that 1 minute.
No problem. And of course, my colleagues can always drag you back to whether or not it was a variance at any point in time they wish to do so. So I may have overstepped my bounds in that regard.
So variance is material.
Let me help you out.
Yeah, sorry.
Hernandez says that a variance was material only when it converts the offense proven at trial into a different offense than what was pled in the charging instrument, which could potentially subject a defendant to another prosecution for the same offense.
Okay.
So why is this material, the log hoe handle distinction material here?
Okay. The difference is material for the people that they have different units of prosecution, and I kind of go to my toy truck argument. You could go to extreme lengths and say, you know, one is deadly weapon is water and the other's deadly weapon is car. I mean, I don't think any of us would argue that that is a material difference between what was alleged and was charged. The fact that they're both wooden doesn't make any kind. You know, that alone I don't think is enough to make it an immaterial variation between the two. I do think that they are separate units of prosecution. And also with the, and then once it is found to be a material variance, you know, there's two different ways we could go with that. The first one is whether the defendant's, the unit of prosecution is the first way. The second way is surprise to the defendant. And I do believe that there, you know, there could have been argued that there was a surprise to the defendant. If you look through the entire record, the defendant was spending the entire time saying, this wasn't a log, this wasn't a log, this wasn't a log. I represented the defendant at the trial. I made the argument that it wasn't a log to the jury. The state made the argument that it was a log to the jury, that there, you know, there was no variance. And so in appellant's brief, they seem to only go on the side of whether or not it's a different unit of prosecution, but that's only one way you can go.
So you would prepare for trial differently to defend against a hoe handle than you would a log?
Yes, I would have.
How?
Well, for one, I think if you look at the record, the police were specifically looking for a log, and they didn't find a log. I think had they been looking for a hoe handle, then they may have found it, and that would have completely changed the character of the trial. And, you know, then I'd also like to point out that in the state's brief, they were making a big hue about self-defense, that the theory of trial was self-defense. However, they seem to ignore the fact that there can be more than one defensive theory to a trial. You know, when it comes to self-defense, I would agree that there is no, you know, that wouldn't change the defense with respect to law versus law. However, since the defense was that the second defense that we had, the one that we were preparing for, the one we were preparing for trial because the state alleged it was log, was a lesser included assault. We got the indictment, it said log. We were like, well, that doesn't make sense, it wasn't a log. All that he's guilty of here is lesser included offense because no deadly weapon, no log was used or exhibited.
Well, is there any indication that he wouldn't have argued self-defense? No, and the reason I ask this is that self-defense requires him to essentially concede that he did hit his son with something, and self-defense is I had some type of qualified right to hit him with this as far as the defense is concerned. So he's conceding that he hit him with something that caused the injury that has made the basis of the prosecution, but there is this argument that, well, I hit him with a hoe handle, but you're arguing that essentially because, well, I hit him with a hoe handle, but they said I hit him with a log, that somehow the concession to doing the injurious thing doesn't really matter under the circumstances.
Well, yes, that is one of my arguments, and it may not be the stronger argument. I mean, I think the stronger argument is the lesser-included offense. I mean, like I said, there are two different theories of defense in this case, and the self-defense was just one of them.
And the lesser-included, enlighten me with regard to that. Why is that the stronger argument?
Well, because the indictment alleged that he was able to log, and we knew for a fact it wasn't a log. You know, we were trying to get the jury to come back with a finding that lesser included assault causing bodily injury was appropriate.
As opposed to deadly weapon.
As opposed to deadly weapon, yes. And we did put forward quite a bit of evidence on that. That was one of our main theories of the case. And because the indictment had alleged a log, we went forward with that theory of defense, and which we wouldn't have had they put voting into.
But there's no question a hoe handle could be used as a deadly weapon.
I think it's fact specific, but I think it could be. I'm not saying it was, but I think it could be.
How do you deal with the language in Holiday that the state quotes, which is essentially a stick is a stick kind of thing? And I would also, I don't know that either of the parties noted, but Holiday got quoted that exact quote in a case by the Court of Criminal Appeals back in 1939, McCullough versus State, in much the same way. And I don't think anybody saw that.
I know I didn't know, and I don't remember seeing it in the state's brief either.
McCullough goes into pretty significant discussion with regard to fatal variances and was dealing with the death of a prisoner and whether he was killed by a broomstick, whether he's killed by a rod with a belt attached to it, whether he was killed by brass knuckles. The jury found a belt. The evidence was brass knuckles and a stick. But in discussing what constitutes a fatal variance, the Court of Criminal Appeals did in fact quote the Holiday as basically a stick is a stick. So, okay.
And I did read that case, and I think part of your question was answered by your question, in that was a murder case. Murder cases, someone died, period. Right. That's the gravamen of the offense. When it comes to aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, there are two different types. There's one where it causes serious bodily injury, and one where it causes bodily injury and use or exhibition of a deadly weapon was used. This is the latter. Now, however, if this case was charged as serious bodily injury, I don't think I'd have like to stand on here, because that is the gravamen of the offense. Serious bodily injury was charged, and the evidence shows serious bodily injury. However, that's not the case in this case. This case, the weapon used is part of the deadly weapon accusation. And so I don't think that applies to me, first of all, because it's for murder and it's a different gravamen of the offense. And second, because this case has to do with what weapon was used. I mean, they have to prove that a deadly weapon was used or exhibited to a log, and they didn't do that.
What type of evidence would have been required to prove that the log that they indicted with would have been a deadly weapon? In other words, I understand the argument is, and the case law is to a certain extent, that you don't just say something is a deadly weapon and identify it. You have to, there's some aspect of the characteristic.
Right. Well, I mean, I don't.
And there's testimony about the length,
right,
the diameter, that type of thing.
And, well, I mean, I would say that issue wasn't really raised, whether or not that specifically, the item that was used was a deadly weapon. And so, I mean, you're asking me to answer hypothetical that I don't think would really help assist this court. Yeah.
There's a case, there's also another case involving a log, the only case that I found in Texas involving a log and the top of this hall, Dewey, B-U-I versus State, involving a Duraflame log. And frankly, I don't recall off the top of my head whether that's a murder case or whether it's a deadly weapon case. But it does address the issue of fatal variance. And essentially, the Court of Appeals, and which Court of Appeals is it? It's Texarkana, says that essentially that even though a Duraflame log is not made of wood, that it wasn't, the fact that it wasn't made of wood, and the use of the word log implies wood, that was not a fatal variance. So here we have no dispute that whatever the instrument is, it's wooden.
Right.
That's not fatal. That's not even a variance. Okay. So the question is, if that type of thing, if you can use a Duraflame log, which is technically not wood, but because it's identified as a log.
Right. Well, I think the character, I don't believe I've read that statute or case. I mean, if I have, it's probably been a while. First of all, like you mentioned, if it was a murder case, then that would be certainly different than this case. You also said that they indicted it as a Durham-Flame log.
They didn't identify it as a Durham-Flame log. Okay. They identified it as a log in the indictment. And then the evidence showed that it was a Duraflame log that was used when he broke in to beat the victim over the head with it. So, but they don't really discuss it very much. They pretty much blow through it pretty fast, going
right.
Log, Duraflame log, no fatal variance.
May I answer?
Sure.
And I think, again, if it was a murder case, that would certainly be it. And also, if they just blew through it, I don't think that their argument would probably be very persuasive to you, especially since it was a federal court of appeals case rather than a court of appeals case.
Okay. Question?
Thank you.
Of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon after he struck his adult son multiple times in the head, leaving the victim with permanent brain injury. Appellant's argument is this. He disagrees with the state's witnesses that the deadly weapon he used was a wooden log. Instead, he says he uses the 3-foot-long wooden handle of a garden hoe. Appellant's arguments are without merit, and the state asks that you reject his appeal for 3 reasons. The first is that there was no variance between the indictment and the evidence presented at trial. The second is that even if there was a variance, it was immaterial. And third, regardless of any variance, appellant received notice of the charge against him and was able to prepare a defense. So first of all, there was no variance between the indictment and the evidence presented at trial. The Texas Court of Criminal Appeals described the doctrine of variance in Gola Harvey State and said, a variance occurs when there's a discrepancy between the allegations in the charging instrument and the proof at trial. In a variance situation, the state has proven the defendant guilty of a crime, but has proven its commission in a manner that varies from the allegations in the charging instrument. In this case, there was no discrepancy. Appellant was indicted for aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. The pertinent part of the indictment read that appellant intentionally, knowingly, or recklessly caused bodily injury to the victim by striking the victim on or about the head, and the defendant did then and there use or exhibit a deadly weapon, to wit, a wooden log. Now, wooden log is not a term defined by statute, so the jury at trial and this court on appeal is required to use its common meaning. At trial, the state presented 3 witnesses to describe the wooden log, which itself was not available. The first was AR, who was present for the assault and who drove the victim to the hospital afterward. AR testified that appellant struck the victim with a wooden log 2.5 inches in diameter and approximately 4 feet long. Specifically, she believed it to be a log that appellant had been using as a walking stick the previous day. She used several words to describe the weapon, including log, stick, and staff. However, when asked by the state specifically whether she would consider the weapon a log, she was adamant that it was. At trial, defense counsel even confronted her with the Merriam-Webster's dictionary definition of log, which is described as a usually bulky piece or length of a cut or fallen tree. AR once again maintained that the weapon was a log. She clarified that she considered anything 2 inches in diameter on, I would consider a log. Second, the state called the victim himself. The victim described the weapon used against him as, it looked like a tree branch, a log. It was long, like something you pick up from outside. And on cross-examination, he once again affirmed, it looked like a tree branch, kind of a bigger tree branch. And the state's final witness was called on rebuttal. This was JV. He described seeing appellant the day before the assault carrying a branch or something that had been broken off and used to walk with. He detailed that object as being about a 5.5-foot tall stick that was 2 inches or so in diameter. Now, the jury at trial was free to accept the testimony of these witnesses instead of accepting appellant's account that the object he used was instead the wooden handle of a garden hoe. The jury was free to reject that and accept and decide that the object was, as the other witnesses testified, a wooden log. Second, even if there was a variance, it was immaterial. If this court does disagree and find that there was a variance in this case, it should still deny appellant's appeal because that variance was immaterial. Now, as explained by the Court of Criminal Appeals in Hernandez v. State, there are two types of variances. The first is when the state alters the statutory theory between what is alleged in the indictment and what is presented at trial. Now, the example in Hernandez is a case where a defendant is charged with threatening a witness, and then at trial, the evidence presented shows that the defendant threatened an informant. The Hernandez court says that threatening an informant is still a crime, but it's not the same offense as the one alleged in the indictment. These types of variances, where the statutory theory is changed, are always material. But that's not what we have here. The type of variance alleged by appellant is described by the Hernandez court as a non-statutory allegation that is descriptive of the offense in some way. Whether such a variance is material depends on whether a hypothetically correct jury charge would result in a conviction for a different offense than what the state alleged. Now, the recent Court of Criminal Appeals case Johnson v. State is directly applicable here. In Johnson, the defendant was charged with aggravated assault by causing serious bodily injury. The indictment alleged that he hit the victim, with his hand and twisted her arm with his hand. At trial, the state proved that the defendant threw the victim against the wall. Nonetheless, the Johnson court found that the variance was immaterial because aggravated assault is a result-oriented offense. What matters is the injury suffered by the victim. In explanation, the court stated the precise act or nature of conduct in this result-oriented offense is inconsequential. The act that caused injury does not define or help define the allowable unit of prosecution for this type of aggravated assault offense, so the variance at issue cannot be material. And shortly thereafter, in 2017, the Court of Criminal Appeals went on to say that the gravamen of the offense remains on the resulting bodily injury, even in prosecutions for aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. Here, the variance alleged by appellant is that he assaulted the victim with a different type of large wooden object. However, because the gravamen of this offense is on the serious bodily injury he caused to the victim and not the type of weapon he used, any variance is immaterial. And this makes sense when we consider the hypothetically correct jury charge for the facts as appellant alleges them. Essentially, the charge would be the same. The only difference would be that wooden log would be replaced with the wooden handle of a garden hoe. Critically, however, the severe injuries to the victim would be the same, as would the wooden object's classification as a deadly weapon. And it's important to note that the injuries to the victim were uncontested. As appellant briefs, the victim suffered memory loss, he suffered permanent speech loss, and lost his sense of smell. Now, under the Texas Penal Code, section 1.0717, a deadly weapon is anything that in the manner of its use or intended use is capable of causing death or serious bodily injury. It is uncontroverted that appellant used a wooden object to send the victim to the hospital and caused him permanent brain injury. The state alleged aggravated assault with a deadly weapon and proved aggravated assault with a deadly weapon at trial. Even assuming there is a variance between the type of weapon used, which again we disagree with, such a variance is immaterial and appellant's conviction should be affirmed. And finally, as to appellant's issue with notice, this argument was expressly rejected by the Court of Criminal Appeals in 2017 in Hernandez. The Court of Criminal Appeals stated, because the state gave sufficient notice of a deadly weapon issue and proved the appellant used some variety of deadly weapon, the variance between the specific deadly weapon alleged in the indictment and that which was proved at trial was immaterial because the indictment language was adequate to inform the appellant of the charge against him so he might prepare a defense. An appellant was able to prepare a defense, the majority of which was a self-defense claim. He did not dispute that he'd struck the victim, and he did not dispute that the victim was severely injured. He also acknowledges in his briefing to the court that he relied on the indictment to prepare his defense that the deadly weapon used was not a log, as the other witnesses stated, but was instead a handle of a garden hoe. There is no indication that appellant was hampered in his ability to prepare a defense, and his notice claim should be rejected by this court.
Okay. Counsel, you cite Holiday and the quote that I mentioned and ask you a question to counsel.
Yes, sir.
Basically, a stick is a stick.
Yes, sir.
In looking at Holiday, you kind of in your anticipation going, we're aware that McGee versus State is sitting there, and we think McGee ended up supporting Ballard, but Ballard got overruled, therefore you should ignore McGee. What you didn't do is there's another case cited in Holiday called McGrew versus State, which is immediately after that, which basically is a stick hidden a stick, because, and I never knew what this was, but the allegation was that a Bois d'Arc stick was used with regard to the assault in question, but that the evidence never mentioned a Bois d'Arc, but mentioned a picket, like one that you would use to tether horses with regard to. So there were two sticks alleged, but the Court of Appeals in the McGrew case said that the type of stick actually mattered, and Holiday cites that case and doesn't try and distinguish it one way or the other. For those of you who want to know what a Bois d'Arc is, Bois is French for wood. D'Arc is curved, which basically means a bow without a string on it, which I had to figure out. So basically in McGrew, they alleged that he was hit with a bow without a string. But the evidence was all that it was a picket pulled out of the ground. And they said that was a fatal variance under the circumstances. And you'll be happy to know that case has only been cited four times. Once was in Holiday, though. So any idea of how we should deal with that kind of fatal variance?
Your Honor, I'd ask
that... Only 1885, so...
I would ask that you rely on Hernandez, which was 2017, and find that it doesn't change... The type of stick involved doesn't change the gravamen of the offense, especially in this type of case where we do have undisputed injuries. We have, again, the bulk was a self-defense claim.
Is there any, counsel mentioned the distinction between some of the cases being murder cases as opposed to deadly weapon, serious bodily injury cases? Do you think Hernandez or Johnson has essentially melded the analysis with regard to the weapon used in terms of whether or not there is a fatal variance under those circumstances?
I have been unable to find any distinction between a murder case and any other type of offense. In Hernandez and in this case, if the object used were to change the type of weapon from a deadly weapon into not a deadly weapon, I could see that being a fatal variance, but we don't have that issue with you. Again, we have undisputed injuries to the victim.
Your third argument is basically the footnote 4 argument from Hernandez, isn't it? And as long as it alleges some variety of a deadly weapon, that's enough.
Yes, because what we do in a situation, again, it's not where the statutory offense has changed. We're just looking at a description. And in a type of variance where we're looking at the description, what we look at is, would the hypothetical jury charge be different? And in this case, it would be the same offense. It would be aggravated assault with a deadly weapon.
Any other questions? All right, thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Basically, in that case, as I understand it, I think she was mentioning something about informant. I don't remember with that, but Hernandez was basically a, he beat the victim, came back, choked her, and waterboarded her, basically. And the indictment alleged that he used water as the deadly weapon. And on appeal, he argued that it was two different units of prosecution because he came out and back. And so I don't think that, I think the analysis is different, would be different in that case, and I'm not sure that the blanket
statement. Because this is a single event.
Yeah. They were arguing it was two different events. We're not arguing here that it was two different events. We're arguing here that there was, log was used, or log was alleged, stick was used. In Hernandez, water was alleged, water was used. There's no variance here. It's not really comparable in Hernandez.
What are we to do when you have when you have witness testimony, okay, which is urged here, which is at variance, but it's also based upon perception of the witness at the time, okay? Let's say the deadly weapon was a charcoal cover, Acadia or something of that nature, okay? And they only got a chance to see it as it's flying by and hitting someone. And so I thought it was Acadia. And so the indictment says it's a charcoal-colored Acadia, okay? But it turns out that when they actually do, the evidence comes in, they find out that it was some other type of SUV. How are we to essentially just say, well, double jeopardy's attached, you were wrong as to what it was, we're conclusively proving that it was another type of vehicle, therefore the indictment is fatally variable under the circumstances? I mean, to what extent, and that's actually something that hasn't actually been discussed in any of the case law, is because that seems to start invading the province of the jury with regard to credibility and findings with regard to this. As counsel said, the jury could have disbelieved your client and decided, in fact, it was a law under the circumstances.
I don't think we invaded the jury of the province, and I don't think it's really even that big of an issue. Let me tell you why.
Okay.
The state has control of the evidence. It's the state's burden to prove the case. The state, if the state goes to trial thinking that it's a log when it's not, then I do think that we should hold the state to that standard. I don't think it has anything to do with the jury issue. I think the state is the one with the investigatory powers. The state is the one with the burden to prove it. The state should know what they're trying to prove when they create the indictment. And so that's my response to that question.
It presumes that the allegation is material. I mean, that assumes, I mean, that's kind of a chicken and egg approach. That assumes that the allegation is material. If it's not material.
Right. If it's not material, I agree it wouldn't.
Let's say they had correctly identified this as a hoe handle, but the variance was they had specified that it was a 3-foot hoe handle, but the evidence ends up showing it's a 2-foot hoe handle.
Well, my argument is that they should have never put 3-foot into the indictment when all they had to do was prove that it was a hoe handle. I mean, they have control of the indictment. They are the ones that decide what they need to prove with respect to the deadly weapon.
But she's making this argument under footnote 4 of Hernandez that as long as there is a allegation of some variety of a deadly weapon, the variance between the specific deadly weapon alleged in the indictment and that which was proved at trial was immaterial. If that statement's true, do you lose?
Well, I don't lose because I think that's fact-dependent, and the facts of this case are different from that case. I also want to address, she was addressing Johnson. I made this argument before. Johnson is a serious bodily injury case. This is a bodily injury case using a deadly weapon. So I think that the analysis is slightly different there. And also, McGrew versus State. McGrew versus State, I think, it's the stake is not.
Since I brought it up, I'll give you an opportunity to say something.
Since you're talking about McGrew versus State, I do think, and that case does predate Holliday versus State, and McGrew versus State was an aggravated assault case. It was not a murder case, so I think that actually applies more aptly here.
Okay.
Thank you all very much. The case is submitted, and at this time, we will stand adjourned. Thank you all very much.